Okay, I'll try to explain some very basic fundamental things about Lagrangian motion at a very small domain. Everything that I'll be talking about happens within viscous scale, so velocity field will be assumed specially smooth, but some randomly fluctuating in time. In a way, the picture is general, so it applies not only to turbulence, but to chaotic flows as well. There are some situations in which your chaotic flow is frozen in time, which it doesn't apply. As long as it has kind of some fluctuations, then the theory applies. And in particular, I will be interested in compressible flow. And our motivation for this work was really chemistry, how chemistry happens in a turbulent flow, and chemistry really happens at a very small scale where it is sensitive, and also some applications to magnetic dynamo. But then we discovered that few basic facts about motion of fluid particles in a smooth flow were not known. Maybe you tell me, because kind of we discovered a few simple statements that looks completely fundamental, and I never saw them before. So now let me formulate the problem. I'll be talking mostly about two particles, and the distance between them I'll call r. Okay, every particle follows its own trajectory. This is some Lagrangian trajectory, which is function of time, function of some t prime, which will be starting time for it, and the position at time where it starts. Let's say this will be 1, so this will be 1, 1. And I have a boundary condition for it, that q of r is equal to r, and of course q dot is equal to v velocity. And then I have second point. And I'm interested in how the distance between two points behave. First we'll discuss this problem, and then we'll go and impose on this velocity field passive scalar and see how what will be the result. So if I'm interested in how my r changed with time, of course r dot is equal to v1 minus v2, taking on Lagrangian trajectories all the way. And as I'm assuming that I'm within viscous scale, I may just Taylor expand this difference and say that it is some, let's say, I component. So this is some matrix, which is rate of strain tensor, and multiply by r itself, and this will be assumed to be function of time only, which means that I take this sigma, calculated this derivative, let's say, in this point, and as long as I am within a viscous scale, and all the evolutions that I will be discussing will happen within this scale, then I may neglect the dependence here on coordinate and just use this linear expansion. So within this assumption, everything that I will tell later will be done. So I'm working here. This is now some random function of time. It is dimensional. Space dimensionality may be arbitrary. And I'm interested in what is really the statistics of this quantity. To describe the statistics of this quantity, I would like to describe what is called evolution operator. So r at time t will be related by some matrix which depends on time t and t prime, and r of t prime. Okay, and this is my evolution operator, and it'd be easy for me to speak about statistics of this guy, which is kind of synonymous with statistics of it. And of course, v for coincident arguments is a unit operator, and I am interested in describing what is the statistics of this matrix when t minus t prime goes to infinity. Again, it's not large that I'm still within viscous interval, but it is much larger than any typical time of my problem, and there are basically two typical times of my problem. First, sigma itself has a dimensionality of inverse time. So inverse sigma gives me a typical stretching grade, Lyapunov exponent, whatever you call it, and also there is a correlation time of this. So I'm now talking about t minus t prime being much larger than typical values of minus sigma and its correlation time. In this limit, the properties of statistics of this Lagrangian evolution are very simple. Actually, what I might say that my matrix W can be presented as is a product of three matrices, and these two matrices are orthogonal, which means that there are some rotations. The statement is that this matrix at the limit of large time saturates and is getting time independent. I think that everybody who tried to do theory about it rediscovered this fact, and we also did it. But it looks like it goes back to early 60s, and I first saw it in some paper by Orzak and Galhir Sulem, but it seems like maybe Tutu Balin was the first who discovered it. The physics is basically very simple. So what happens if you see, let's say, I have some ball, some volume, and I see how it evolves. Okay, it evolves into some ellipsoid. There are some directions at which it is stretched, some directions at which it is contracted, and of course it is also rotated. This will describe my rotation in space. This will be diagonal matrix of the following form. I will characterize it by D. Those are D random variables, and I will be interested in its statistics, and there are zeros here. So this is stretch and contraction matrix, if you want. And this really describes me at finite time, the direction of stretch and contraction may interchange. I mean, I have a fluctuating flow. Sometimes I pick some direction of my ellipsoid, and it is a stretching direction. Then after some time, it may be contracting direction. The statement, the physical meaning of the statement about this matrix being frozen is a very simple, transparent physical statement that when you go to a large time, you don't change directions. If you, some direction of you is a direction, let's say, of maximal stretching, of course it rotates in time. But as long as you are Lagrangian and you are living within this ellipsoid, this direction will be always stretching, which means that there are some periods of time where it is contracting. But you cannot overcome the all previous stretching to make this direction overall contracting. So this is this statement. So basically what we're now interested in, we're interested in the probability distribution of these stretching variables, which are, I defined this way, and in the probability distribution of the angles, how my ellipsoid is oriented in space. Now, what is important, I'm now making some kind of brief introduction. What I'm talking about, more or less well-known and elementary. What is also important is that stretching accumulates this time, and rotation proceeds more or less on a time scale of this, of my rate of strain. Which means that the typical time of stretching of those variables is T, is my time. And the typical time of change of my rotation is sigma minus 1. And they are vastly different in the limit of large time. And as long as you have two sets of random variables, one is very fastly changing and another is slowly changing, then they are statistically independent. And really the statement is that this matrix is just distributed on the rotation group, and it's the what follows, I will not be interested in it because I will be studying characteristics that are kind of insensitive. There are some characteristics which are sensitive to this distribution of rotation, but what is important is that these angular variables in the limit of large time are independent on my stretching variables. So basically everything that I need to describe the statistics of Lagrangian stretching is the probability distribution at time t of my variables. And here is a very simple statement, how this probability distribution looks like. I'm talking now absolutely arbitrary flow, absolutely arbitrary statistics, Gaussian, non-Gaussian, finite correlated, delta correlated, it doesn't matter. What matters is that at the limit of large time, this probability distribution has the following form. Here are some normalization factor. Maybe later I'll say a few words. And I assume that I am working in the, I'm writing the probability distribution in the non-degenerate, I mean, this is the function of this D variable, it lives in D-dimensional space, and I'm now describing it where rho I is not, does not coincide with rho G. This is what is, when they coincide, there is some degeneracy which is statistically irrelevant to what I'll be talking about, and there are theta function of all the theta, I ordered them according to their values, okay? And here is the exponent, and here the main statement, that I have here what is called Cramer function, rate function, entropy function, whatever you call it. And the main statement is that this function is a single scalar function of d argument, and you may write it in the following way. What is the statement? This is a very important statement. I have some complicated function of d plus one variable. The statement is that this function has the following form in the limit of large time. Time lives here. It's an overall factor. Here I have my function characterized by d numbers. That's it. And of course, the shape. What is known about the shape of this function? First of all, it is known that it is positive. Second, it is known that it is equal to zero at zero. Okay? Which shows me that when rho 1 is equal to lambda 1t, this is a maximum of probability. Okay? And those lambdas are called Lyapunov exponents. You may know different ways, but they are completely equivalent to introduce Lyapunov exponents. So this is my form of probability distribution function. Okay. Now, what can actually what I do need to know is, oh no, this is an elementary, no, this is an elementary, I'll tell you where something non-trivial starts, you'll be surprised, it will be still elementary. So this is well-known fact. So what and also what is known is that this function is a convex function of its argument. That's it, that's all I need. This is an elementary introduction. Now, what I need to know are those quantities, Lyapunov exponents. Huh? Yeah. It is its global minimum. And then it is convex function going like this. Now, you know that in the incompressible flow, one may show that if the flow is random, which means that S is non-zero in some interval of coordinates, this is a formal way to say that the flow is random. Then I have probability distribution in some, at least in some interval. It is known that lambda 1 is positive in incompressible flow. That's nice. Now I want to ask the question about compressible flow. And the first question that I'm asking, what is the sum of the Lyapunov exponent in the incompressible flow? Of course it is zero. Can we tell something about this quantity, which is physically logarithmic rate of volume change? And I would like to stress that Lyapunov exponents are not stability eigenvalues. There's some characteristics which appears in Lagrangian frame at the limit of large time. So I'm taking some distance and I'm asking how at the limit of large time it will grow. The answer, it grows exponentially. And at the limit of large time, the rate of this growth is lambda. Now, this is a logarithmic rate of volume growth, or decay. Now, what is this quantity for? Can we say anything general about it? And here starts new result. Okay? And the statement is that, of course, we may consider a situation in which this sum is positive, let's say expanding universe. We may consider a situation like, I don't know, shrinking country like Israel, where this sum is negative. But we prefer to consider what most experimentalists would ask us to consider a fixed volume. So we consider fixed volume, which basically means that the determinant of our W matrix averaged over the flow, which is the same as exponent of sum of rho average, okay? This is equal to, let's say, unity, to a fixed volume, okay? And here is the statement. For a flow in a fixed volume, the sum of the Lyapunov exponent is always negative. If somebody saw it, tell me, because when we discovered it, we for a long time did not believe that it is unknown. And the proof actually is very straightforward. You just use this relation. We take this relation, and instead of brackets, we substitute integration with this probability distribution. That's what one has to do. So I'm saying that z minus 1 integral over all d rho exponent sum of rho minus t s of rho minus lambda t over t all this, this is equal to unity. This is volume conservation. Now we consider the limit of large time. Then one may show that this factor is just power law, it is time in some power, because it is determined by the behavior of S near the near its minimum, where it is quadratic. Then it is irrelevant. What we would like to see, we would like this to cancel at the limit of large time, to have this integral unity and not exponentially increasing or exponentially decreasing. And then you can immediately show that because S is a convex function, there is, you may write it as follows, let's say, rho plus, let's call it x, okay? Then here is x plus lambda minus s of x. And this should be zero if you want your integral to be constant. And as long as it is zero and s is a convex function, then x minus s of x is always positive. So lambda is always negative. Here is sum of lambda, of course. That's a very simple proof. I never saw it. And it is very important, and it is very relevant to the physics of passive fields, which I'm going to discuss now. It is if S is strictly convex. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay. I guess that people... Oh, I'll come to it. Yeah, I'll come to it. Now, I would like to finish with particles and come to fields. Namely, if we would like to consider some passive fields in our flow, and we would like to describe the way Massimo said before that, I want to know the correlation function of fields at a given instant of time. What I have to do to calculate it, I have to track those points where I am calculating function back in time, because I know the evolution of my passive field in the Lagrangian frame. So here, if I would like to describe passive fields, what I need to know Lagrangian description fixed by a destination point, not by the starting point. If you study particles, you always fix the initial condition and then see how they go. But when you study fields, you track them backwards. And it's kind of everybody knew and nobody considered it to be non-trivial. It started to be non-trivial only in compressible flow. So now I would like to have the same picture, but I would like to have my trajectory fixed by its... So I would like to consider, let's say, Q again of T prime R, but now it will be fixed by its final point. So Q of T R will be equal to R. And everything I will be taking on in such a way, let's call it tilde. So when I'm writing tilde, that means that everything is taken on a Lagrangian trajectory fixed by its final point. Now, yeah, Misha. Oh, nothing. I mean, it's an expanding universe. My statement is, if you have a flow in the fixed volume, then the sum of Lyapunov exponents is negative. That's the statement. Whatever the flow inside, I'll explain it in a minute. It's physically absolutely trivial what it is, Boris. Oh, okay, let me do it now. I wanted to... So what is the physics of my statement? The physics is extremely simple. Let's try to do it in a straightforward way. Because after all, what I'm talking about? I'm talking about the rate of change of volume, okay? And this is dV of V, of my velocity field. The only thing that I want to calculate Lagrangian average of this quantity, not an Eulerian one, which is unity, of course. Because at any given moment of time, if I average divergence of V over the volume, then it gives me unity, because, I mean, volume is conserved. So I would like to calculate it, and V is determined on my Lagrangian trajectory, okay, and I integrate it over Lagrangian coordinates, not over Q. This is what characterizes Lagrangian average, which is Lyapunov exponent. I'll divide it, well, volume, whatever. Volume is equal to unity. Now, what is it? Of course, I know V is a function of Q. What I would like to have, I would like to pass from this variables to this variables. Okay? So I would like to have this integral over Q, V of Q. Okay? But what comes? Here comes a Jacobian. Okay? what really I have here? I have determinant of dq over dr. Now, for incompressible flow, it's unity and it is the same average. Now, for compressible flow, it starts to depend on time, because q is r only at initial time, then q starting to deviate. I'm trying to explain this result in a physical language. And for theoretician, physical language is to write some integral. Okay? But in a moment, I'll say something in a completely hand-waving way. So it is this factor which makes this average different from zero. And what is this factor? It actually tells you that every Lagrangian trajectory now comes with its own weight, and it is its weight. And this weight is equal to unity only in the initial instant of time. And then you may say that L here is what I average. Now, this and this, they are correlated. Because in the regions where divergence of V is negative, you have this larger than unity. Because where you have contracting flow, okay, you have more Lagrangian particles in these fields. Actually, this is a very simple statement. The sum of Lyapunov exponents, the rate of volume change, is calculated in a Lagrangian way. And here, Lagrangian trajectories on which I have a contraction of volume have more statistical weight than Lagrangian trajectory where I have an expansion. That's a very simple statement. And that's basically what all this manipulation show. I mean, nothing but this. Now it's okay, Boris? You want more integrals or more physics? What do you mean? No, I mean, Eulerian average is 1. Lagrangian average, and this is my statement, this is something which is negative. This integral is negative. It's asymptotically in time is the sum of Lyapunov exponents. And it is negative. And what I'm saying is that it is negative because when dV, there are some places in space where dV is positive, there are some places in space where it is negative. And they are at a given instant of... Yeah, Boris. Yeah. At any, it's my volume, which means that, look, this is a very simple thing. It means at any given, look, I take at some time equal to zero, took some volume, evolve it with time, and calculated its value. Then I took another volume, calculate its value. Then I took another volume, calculate its value. Okay, now at any given instant of time, when I sum them up together, I will get the same volume. Okay, some of them shrink, some of them expand. Now, when I calculate the rate of change, I will be calculating every such volume with its own weight. Because it's a Lagrangian description. Lagrangian description, you mark particle at the very beginning. Here you measure is uniform. Okay, at the very beginning, you marked all the particles. And you have measured absolutely uniformly distributed over space. Then you let it evolve. As it evolves, you have more measure, more Lagrangian particles in the region where your dV is negative. So at any instant of time, if you would like to calculate the what is the Lagrangian average, which means that you average over position back in the past, when you average over space at a given moment, you always have zero. The integral of divergence of V is, of course, zero, average at a given time. Okay? Boy, I mean, this is what means Lagrangian average. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 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 And, yeah. But no, no. Of course, no. Of course, of course. Yeah, with ergodicity assumption it is fine, but it also works without any ergodicity assumption. It works in any given volume. It's actually this, but now you have to mean by average also that you average not only by different realizations of your flow, but also by different by different volumes, by different small volumes in your flow. Okay, well, I expected here to have many questions, but unfortunately I have to move. And Boris, we can continue for another 2 hours. I mean, it took a few weeks for us to get used to this. Okay. This is the statement. Now, what I now wanted to move, I want to move to fields. And when you consider fields, you consider trajectories that are fixed by their final destination. Now you may, in the same way, introduce another matrix, which is W. And this W is the same. It satisfies the equation that it depends on time prime. Its time derivative with respect to its first argument is equal to sigma W. But now that it is equal to unity at the final time. That's it. Okay? And you may ask the same question. What is the statistics of this guy? How it is described, etc. You may say, what if I want to calculate any average of my function? And you see that for passive scalar, everything will be written as a function of this matrix. Because for passive scalar, I have points with destination. And then you ask, what should be this kind of average? And more or less in the same way how you pass from one into another, you may show that this average is really can be written again, as an integral over Lagrangian position, and then you may pass at the given. At the end, you may write it as f of your w, which were previous. I know the probability distribution of w previously defined, and I want now to relate this guy to that guy. Then you may check that you have to do the same thing, so you have to average f of w with a determinant of w. So again, every Lagrangian trajectory in any statistical average comes with its own weight, which is determined by the rate of volume change. Which means that if now you want to have your probability distribution similar to this p, let's call it p tilde, then you have to take the p that you had before and add this guy, which is just sum of rho y. For incompressible flow, of course, this is zero, this is unity, they are the same. Now, for compressible flow, they aren't the same. And I'm not talking here about temporal irreversibility in the sense that my velocity field is reversible. I don't care. It might be reversible, it might be irreversible. What compressible fluid is different from incompressible is that statistics forward and backwards in time are different. Even the flow is time reversible. Or it may be time irreversible. It's another thing. So this is the difference from if I defined my Lagrangian trajectory by their final destination. This is the probability distribution of respective stretch and contraction variables, and it is related to the probability distribution in the forward in time way in this way. So if I now ask, say, what are the Lyapunov exponents of my flow taken backwards, okay? And then one may show that here I have Lyapunov exponents with tilde sign, and they are related to the Lyapunov exponent of this p. This p has its own set of Lyapunov exponents plus some ye, and y is determined by the condition that it is equal to unity. Well, over its argument taken at y. Actually, now I have to find the extremum, not of this function, which is exponent of minus ts, but of this sum, and when I'm finding the extremum of this, it is given by this. And it is now very bad news for theoretician, because it tells me that my statistics of backward motion, even Lyapunov exponent, are not directly related to the statistics of to Lyapunov exponent of the forward motion. It depends on the form of probability distribution. It depends on the form of entropy function, which is again physically absolutely clear, because now every trajectory comes with its own weight, and its weight depends on the statistics of velocity field. It's not now something which you can one relate universally to enough. What is even more interesting is that the same way you may show under the same conditions that you have a fixed volume, that this sum is positive, while this was negative. So in a compressible flow, particles, when you look at particles, how they move forward in time, they feel in average contraction, which means that as time goes to infinity, this probability unity, every given infinitesimal volume will shrink. Now, if you would look from the perspective of the fields, which means that you ask what really feel the field, because it feels evolution coming from the past, then the field feels expansion. And even more important statement, they aren't the same, because I defined lambda also like by trajectories fixed by their destination, but by time moving forward. I may ask, what is really the exponents of the backwards evolution? And the exponents of the backwards evolution, of course, they are minus lambda tilde, not lambda that I had before. And it tells you something, how much time? 2 minutes. That's great. Okay. It tells you something very important. So what really was discovered by Chertkov and Virgasola and Kolokolov, that when you increase the degree of compressibility of the flow, you change from particle separation to contraction, you get flow compressible, it changed completely the whole behavior of the scalar, etc. And of course they worked within the Kreitmann model, where you may show that they are the same because the flow is time reversible. Now, what is an important statement, which I just briefly mentioned, that when you increase degree of compressibility in a flow, you have a transition for particles when, let's say, lambda 1 was positive and then it's getting negative when you increase degree of compressibility. And the transition from fields, let's say you are interested in the passive tracer, which satisfies the equation like this, etc. And then in this interval of scales, everybody knows that it is Batchelor regime, and it is logarithm L over R1T minus lambda D tilde. That what should stay here for scalar. And this change sign at a different moment, at a different degree of compressibility, when lambda 1 change side, which actually determines how particles separate this time. So this is an important remark, and I wanted to make it. And now, let me just jump to the conclusion, because I have had no time to say anything about fields. So really, the most interesting and important statement done in this work, which again I forgot to mention, has been done by Balkovsky and Fuchson and myself. The statement was about the density that satisfies this equation minus kappa plus n. So if I have passive density and impose on my field, I would like to know how, let's say, moments of this density behave. And one may show that they behave in time exponentially. It's a time temporal problem with initial condition. I have some initial fluctuation, I would like to know how they behave. And they behave exponentially. Now, what is gamma as a function of alpha? Its derivative at zero is just the sum of the Lyapunov exponent, because the sum of the Lyapunov exponent is the rate of change of volume, which is minus the rate of change of density. And this is like this. Okay? Now, what we've shown, that it behaves in the following way. Without density, for total n, without diffusion. If we include diffusion, we can also solve this problem and show that it behaves like this. Okay? And if we add chemistry, and for this I really don't have time, it behaves like this. What is important here is the most important part, at least now I would like to say, last 30 seconds, Charlie, I apologize. What this growth really means? It means instability. And what the physics of instability is something which I believe everybody knows. Just let me tell you what is it. It's something that tells you that in the compressible flow, density fluctuation grow. But there is one very nice example of compressible flow. It's when you put in the incompressible flow inertial particles. Let's say bubbles or metallic particles. Then, because you have returned, the motion of your particle is either retarded or advanced with respect to the velocity field, you may show that the velocity field of your particle will be compressible. Now, from here follows the statement that then any initial fluctuation of the concentration of your particle will grow. And the higher the moment, the higher it grows. Okay? And this is precisely this instability which people used for years for flow visualizations. It really, you put bubbles over there, and they started to get all the bubbles inside the vortices, all the metallic particles in between. And this is basically the theory of this instability. And it's very much like dynamo. That's why we came to this after making dynamo. Well, sorry, I have to apologize and finish at this point. And I hold for the questions. I had 3 minutes. Okay, let's. Yeah. Yeah. The behavior here and the position. This crosses, well, for just for density, not for n minus n mean value. It's always unity because mean value of density conserved. So here is unity. It crosses zero at unity just because n mean value does not change. But if you ask not about this, if you ask about n minus n in the power alpha, about this, about the fluctuation, then this position where it crosses depends on velocity statistics, etc. But of course it's independent on diffusion, but the diffusion makes it kind of, this is dissipative anomaly on Chertkov's favorite language, yeah. Why should you be interested in this result? Really, I mean, the most interesting part for me is this, what happens when I also put here chemical reaction, where I add here a time minus n squared, let's say. Let's say my n interact with itself, or n actually in any power. Then I can show you what happens, that the behavior is like this, which is a simple statement. N, any power of n decays exponentially. Now, of course you know that if you just forget about spatial distribution, velocity field, you will have this equation and it gives you decay like 1 over t. And it's a very slow chemical reaction. What I'm telling you take your chemical reactor and you put ultrasound into it and you have dramatic increase of chemical reaction. Because of this simple mechanism that you gather your reactant in some region where you create a very high concentration. Maybe some people already did it because it's a very natural idea. This is the theory of this phenomenon. Okay? Maybe nobody did it. I don't know. But this, I started from chemistry to think about. And also it might be not necessarily sound waves and compressible flow. It might be that you have inertial particles in the flow and they are, say, make catalysis for some chemical reaction. What it tells you here, that as long as you have compressible flow, you have growth of the fluctuation of your particle and locally dramatic increase on the rate of chemical reaction. It's dynamo, really.
Look, before we thank the speaker one last time, Jenny wants to make a quick announcement.
The event where we all used to have lunch used to be the test of the land. So you get your food and you can come here or go to any other place in this city.
And I may continue talking.
That's very nice. That's very nice. So, yeah.